Wrestling Radio, LockerRoomHQ.com.
Screw you guys. And that guy is too dumb. Think about the booking on that. That explains even less. This was the absolute worst thing I have ever seen any time in my entire life, and now I'm going to go kill myself. Oh, what can you do? All right, ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not, this is Dirt, your host for Wrestling Radio here in Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network, and we're here for a week-in-review wrap-up show. Because of the holiday weekend, Thanksgiving, all of that wonderful stuff that goes along with it, I did not have time to record any of the small shows throughout the week, so we're getting one big blowout show here. And I was actually going to do this show last night, Sunday night, but ended up doing an episode of Comaholics with the Apocalypse, Eris Leopakis, and also Dan, the man, DJ House. So that episode will be going up sometime in the next couple days. But as far as wrestling goes, here we go. You're getting everything in your one big week in review show, and what a week it was. Of course, the big news, John Cena fired at Survivor Series, which led to Monday Night Raw, Wade Barrett saying that John Cena would be able to make his final goodbye. And of course, as you have no doubt heard by now, Miz cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase, and he's now the WWE champion. We also had an okay episode of Superstars, great episode of SmackDown as far as the wrestling goes, and then I actually watched WWE Experience this weekend. For those of you unfamiliar with Experience, they basically took the old Sunday Night Heat logo from MTV, basically, and turned it into a wrap-up show. It's Jack Corpella, and he's in the WWE studios. It just basically runs down everything that happened on Raw, SmackDown. So that was kind of interesting to watch that as well. But a little more time to watch because sitting around with family and whatnot, not a lot of time to record. But we're going to go ahead and do that now, and we will start, of course, with Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw from last week opened up with Nexus. They came out to the ring, of course, no John Cena. Wade Barrett basically said that John Cena had screwed him as the special referee. He said John Cena knew in advance that he was not going to call the match in Wade Barrett's favor. Therefore, he demanded a second shot at the title. And the GM chimed in basically at this point and said that Orton versus Wade Barrett, the rematch, would in fact happen tonight on Raw. And Wade Barrett said he knew that was going to happen, and in advance of that, he had told John Cena could appear on Raw to say his final goodbye. So, this episode of Raw was built around the idea that you were going to get Wade Barrett versus Randy Orton, number two, and that John Cena would be able to give his goodbye retirement speech. They announced next week will be a three-hour Raw special King of the Ring tournament. I love the King of the Ring, but I wish they'd make it go back to a pay-per-view and not have it be a three-hour episode of Raw. This is also not the final three-hour episode of Raw of the year. There's another three-hour episode of Raw coming up in a couple weeks, which will be the Slammy Awards. So be prepared for that. They also announced at this point that CM Punk is now the third member of the Raw broadcast team. He came out and sat down and just basically said, you know, for the time being, indefinitely, until something else comes along, he is going to be a commentator on Monday Night Raw, which, I mean, he does a great job. I mean, let's just say straight up right now, he did an excellent job doing commentary on the show. He's, of course, you know, still recovering from this injury. They wanted to do something with him, not just having him sit around. And he's the type of guy who, you know, I'm sure he's much happier doing something than sitting at home and doing nothing. So good fit for everything all around. They had their first King of the Ring qualifier match, Sheamus versus R-Truth. They had R-Truth, of course, back to his original What's Up song. His new song was just terrible. And so they just, cut bait, so to speak, bit the bullet, and let that song go. And, I mean, you know, the new song wasn't catchy. It wasn't poppy. It didn't have, you know, the energy to it that What's Up had. It didn't have the crowd play that What's Up had. So, you know, I'm not opposed to the idea of them doing a new song with R-Truth, you know, but it's just that was not the song they should have gone with, and now they know. Anyway, they had a fun little match with Sheamus and R-Truth, but really didn't have... They obviously didn't have the time that they needed. There were a lot of segments on Raw, a lot of talking, a lot of backstage stuff they had to do, whatever. And it just kind of felt like it took away from the wrestling matches. So, even though the match was okay, it just felt short. Sheamus eventually just hit the brogue kick, did the razor's edge, got the pin. They had Lay Cool try to get in the building, but the security guard wouldn't let him in because they weren't Raw people. They had Natalya show up, and Lay Cool tried to get Natalya to vouch for him, and she said that, you know, she didn't know who they were, and so they were left out of the building. And, you know, this is one of those situations where I know what they're trying to do as far as the segment goes and tell a storyline, but at the same time, Lay Cool has been on Raw every week for the past 2 months, and so now suddenly the guy, for whatever reason, like the security guard knows, he follows the storyline close enough that he knows that they are actually SmackDown talent that's only been on Raw. Where your average, you know, fan watching at home doesn't even remember, those types of deals. And then not only that, but Natalya just says, "Nope, I have no idea who they are," and just kind of walks away. And I don't know. It like I said, I understand what they're trying to do, but I don't know. Just that type of segment doesn't work for me here in a situation like this. Anyway. They had Santino. He was backstage with Kozlov. He was upset that they did not win the tag titles at Survivor Series. Kozlov tried to, make him happy, but it wasn't working. So then suddenly they heard this ukulele playing, panned over. There was Tamina. She and Kozlov stared at each other for a little bit. Then she planted a big wet kiss on him and took off. And he had a giant boner on cable television and faded back into his chair. What is it with Santino and the chicks? It's like Santino and Maria, Santino, Beth Phoenix, Santino, Tamina. I don't know if this guy is just like this huge chick magnet in real life and they're just kind of playing off this. I mean, is he doing the Batista and all the divas? I don't understand what the deal is, but more power to him, I guess. We had, Randy Orton backstage talking about how Cena did call the match right down the line. He respects Cena, but he said, of course, that it, doesn't matter who the referee was. He was still always going to be champion, and he's going to leave tonight as champion regardless. He also said he guarantees that Wade Barrett would not leave with the title. So there you go. They had Ezekiel Jackson now as a face, which, you know, I kind of thought he was heelish before when he was doing his little squash match stuff. But apparently now he's a huge babyface. They had him versus Alex Riley for the King of the Ring qualifier. Originally it was supposed to be The Miz, but they had Alex Riley come out, say that Miz was unable to come out here. He had an anxiety attack, and so therefore Alex Riley would be taking his place. So, A, you knew that Miz was going to be cashing in his Money in the Bank later in the show. They didn't want him beat up at this point. And B, you knew there was no way in hell Alex Riley was going to win this match. So they just had Ezekiel Jackson throw him around and, whatever. They had John Cena come out to do his farewell speech, which was probably one of the best segments. This was a perfect retirement speech. This was, I don't think they could have done this segment any better. I don't think anybody who didn't like this segment, I don't understand why they watch professional wrestling. It wasn't a match This was not two guys wrestling, and if you're upset that it was an entertainment segment on the show, this is one of those entertainment segments that wrestling needs. This is one of those just great moments that they put together. Now, obviously, no one believes that John Cena is actually fired. No one believes that John Cena is actually leaving. No one believes that, you know, John Cena is going away and never coming back. But having said that, it was a great segment. It was very entertaining. It was a lot of fun. He got the people to do, you know, all the men chant, "I hate Cena." All the women and children say, all the women and children say, "Let's go Cena." All the men say, "Cena sucks," which basically turned it into, a babyface chant. It turned the whole idea of people chanting "Cena sucks" into something that John Cena wants. He wants people to do that. So, I don't know. It was just kind of funny how they turned that around, people turned that chant into something, that John Cena enjoyed. And so now, anytime people chant "Cena sucks," it's going to be, you know, as if he was calling them to do it, which is good for him. So anyway, they had Cena just basically say he missed the birth of his, I think it was like his nephew. His mom's birthday is coming up, so he's going to be there for her. He started to cry a little bit. It was a great segment. And of course, you know, like I said, nobody bought it, but it was still wonderful television. He finished his speech. He went to leave. He's walking out the arena. All the guys, all the baby faces and production people from Raw were there to, wish him good luck and to see him off. And of course, as he walks out of the building, Wade Barrett walks into frame, does the "you can't see me" mocking John Cena behind John Cena's back. John Cena never saw it. And then Wade Barrett went back into the arena smirking. Fun segment. Just good, fun segment. Totally enjoyable. All right, let's see. What do we do? We had Daniel Bryan versus Ted DiBiase, King of the Ring qualifier match. Probably because John Cena went long. He even said Billy Kidman's freaking out there because I've gone past my time. So apparently Billy Kidman's in the gorilla position these days. But they had this match, Daniel Bryan, Ted DiBiase, this was, 4 minutes or something. Very brief. Brie Bella came out. She was, so excited for Daniel Bryan, thought he was hot. He didn't know what to make of her being at ringside. When he won, she came in the ring. They had Nikki Bella come down. The two Bella twins were kind of fighting over him a little bit. And he kind of backed out and pushed the two of them together and then just kind of stood back, kind of laughing at the whole thing. And it's funny. I watched this, and of course, my thought is that he's a gentleman. Women come out and kind of throw themselves at him, and he's going to say, thank you, but no thank you. I'm not into, freaky little one-night stands, whatever. It's nice, kind of chuckling at him, but then leaving. And for whatever reason, a lot of the, if you want to call it the blogosphere, the, online trolling, whatever, they suddenly picked up this story as Daniel Bryan does not like girls. And I don't think that WWE is going to be turning Daniel Bryan into the new Orlando Jordan. I'm not exactly sure, where this storyline is going, but I'm pretty sure it's not that he plays for the other team. I'm pretty sure that it's just one of those things where, he doesn't own a TV, he's a vegetarian, he's quiet, he's nice, he's polite, and women throw themselves at him, and he says, thank you, it's, an honor that you find me so attractive, but I'm not going to take advantage of you. And that's 100% how I saw that whole thing, playing out. And for some reason, a lot of the world otherwise seems to see it the other way. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out. But we had Natalya come out. She wrestled with Alicia Fox. Another quick match. They just had Natalya hit a delayed vertical suplex, just like Anvil used to do, Davy Boy Smith used to do. Kind of playing into the history of the hearts and all that kind of stuff. She did it on Alicia Fox, then threw her in the sharpshooter, got her to tap, and quick segment, whatever. We saw Melina, John Morrison backstage. Apparently they are dating again. Whatever. We had John Morrison versus Tyson Kidd in a King of the Ring qualifier match. And again, quick match. Not much to it. Basic, simple match. They basically had John Morrison do his springboard kick, get his Starship Pain, and that was the end of that. So I don't know if that's a good sign for Tyson Kidd, that they broke up his tag team. They had him do absolutely no extended storyline with his former tag team partner, and then they're blowing him off on these quick matches on TV. Not a good sign for him. We had Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett for the WWE title. They had Nexus come out and attack Randy Orton on his way to the ring, and so they had Randy Orton selling his injuries. GM announced that none of the Nexus guys could be at ringside, but of course, you know, Randy Orton was already injured at this point. So Barrett started the match, started going after Randy Orton's knee, just kind of hit it over and over and over. He hit his Wasteland finisher. He covered Randy Orton, and he was all but guaranteed to win. John Cena jumped out of the crowd, pulled the referee out of the ring. He gave Barrett the FU, and then as the Nexus guys ran down to chase off John Cena left through the crowd. They all ran after him. Wade Barrett kind of got up, and just in time for Randy Orton to hit the RKO and get the win. So, Randy Orton beaten up, attacked. Still able to come back and defeat Wade Barrett with the help of John Cena. So then at this point, out comes The Miz. He cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase. And to WWE's credit, he did not hit his finisher and take the title. To WWE's credit, they had The Miz fight Randy Orton. Randy Orton fought back, and the two of them actually went for, 5 minutes, 7 minutes. I mean, they actually had a little match here where Miz really had to fight to get that title. So, I mean, Miz has zero credibility as a champion. As far as I'm concerned, zero credibility as a human being or any type of professional worker. But at least they tried to, Randy Orton got beat up. He already had a match. He went through a lot and yet still had to, fight The Miz for a while. So here's the problem. Unless Miz is just going to do a lot of walk out of the ring and let time expire so that he still retains the title, or do a DQ so that he still retains the title, or have Alex Riley attacking everybody behind the referee's back, there's no way that you can say that The Miz is going to beat any of these other top-level guys. He had a feud with John Cena last summer. How did that end? It ended with John Cena beating The Miz in 5 minutes, on SummerSlam, I think it was. And that was the end of their feud. He has never been portrayed as someone at their level. He's never been portrayed as any type of credible threat. And again, here, he was not a really credible threat to Randy Orton. Because Randy Orton had already gone through a lot by the point that Miz came out, and Randy Orton still fought him for a considerable amount of time in as far as Money in the Bank cash-ins go. So, I'm having a hard time envisioning how this title reign is going to work. And there's another problem here. A lot of people said, well, at least it feels fresh. It feels fresh. It feels different. Miz as champion is at least not the same guys. Sure. I'll grant you that. But at the same time, it's not like I'm desperately waiting for a pay-per-view match with The Miz as champion. It's not like, when Sheamus became champion, Sheamus beat John Cena on a fluke and won the belt. So then the next time out with the title that he had to put it up for, he had to actually prove that he could hold on to the title, and he did. And then once that happened, the attitude kind of started to change that, well, Sheamus is this big guy. He did, beat a bunch of worthy competitors, and it built him up as a credible champion. And now nobody questions he's a top-level guy. And if he were to go out and win the title, next week, you would just go, okay, that makes sense. Sheamus is champion. Miz is not in that situation. Miz has not had 50 squash matches on TV leading up to his fluke win with the title. that's something that they did with Sheamus. For the longest time, Sheamus was on ECW and then on Raw, where he just came out and just face off against an Evan Bourne or Chavo Guerrero or whoever, and would just beat him up in a couple minutes, and then that was it. It was over. So, you know, Miz just doesn't have any of that steam, and it's going to be very difficult, like I said, without doing a lot of countouts, without doing a lot of walkouts, to really make it, at least make it work. Here's the other thing. The other big problem was that people going into Survivor Series were basically buying Survivor Series because John Cena promised to beat the crap out of Wade Barrett, which he did not do. Wade Barrett said he was going to be champion, which he did not become champion. They had Miz say that he was going to cash in Money in the Bank. He did not cash in Money in the Bank. And the whole main event was based around this idea of, would John Cena screw over Randy Orton, or would he call it, down the middle? And he said, I'm going to call it down the middle, and he went out there and called it down the middle. So there was no extra twist, there was no added intrigue, there was no excitement to Survivor Series, and instead, all of this stuff happened on Raw, which is good for getting the Raw rating up, but it's really bad for pay-per-view, because anybody who bought Survivor Series pay-per-view said, well, that sucked, I didn't get to see any of the stuff I wanted to see, and then they gave it away the next night on Raw. Everything that was special and going to be going on, they gave away on Raw. So, I don't know, just some things to think about when you think about WWE. And, you know, it may play into kind of the long-term woes that they've been having with pay-per-views and whatnot. We'll just have to see, you know, how it plays out years down the line. But I just, I don't know. I think it was kind of a bad move on a lot of fronts to do all this stuff for free on TV after doing absolutely nothing on the pay-per-view. All right, so anyway, that's going to wrap it up for the recap of Raw. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk a little bit about Superstars, and then we're going to talk about SmackDown. And I do have to say, SmackDown was a much better show. And part of the reason why SmackDown was a much better show is because the wrestling got time, and it was a lot of fun. But talk about that right after this commercial break.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to PopCultureNetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at PopCultureNetwork.com.
Check out www.LockerRoomHQ.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.PopCultureNetwork.com for everything else, from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.PopCultureNetwork.com. All right, folks, we are back here on Wrestling Radio on LockerRoomHQ.com. And again, whether you like it or not, I am your host, Dirt, talking now about WWE Superstars and then, of course, Friday Night SmackDown on Sci-Fi. Now, a little note about WWE Superstars. We haven't talked about Superstars really in depth for quite a while, and that's because I just kind of stopped watching the show. And it wasn't really a conscious decision. It was just kind of one of those things where I kind of realized at one point, I haven't watched Superstars in a while. And no real rhyme or reason. I think just Thursday nights just became, you know, Big Bang Theory moved to Thursday, and just started watching that and not paying attention to Superstars and forgot all about it. So recorded it, watched it. Here we go. First match, we had Curt Hawkins versus Trent Beretta. Let me just say this. Whoever does the ring announcing on Superstars, whoever the female is, I don't know who she is, she sounds like the worst, most generic ring announcer. Remember back when they had like the ECW games on PlayStation 1 and Nintendo 64 and just how generic and terrible they were because they were the WWE games recycled again to make the first one, recycled again to make the next one. That's just who this lady sounds like. She does not have any ring presence. Her voice does not carry. Just terrible. Anyway, Curt Hawkins versus Trent Beretta. These are the two guys who both their tag team partners were cut. So no more Dude Busters, no more Gate Crashers. But these two guys had a fun match. It actually went really long. I believe it went through a commercial break. And so the two of them... just really had a fun, good match. This is also obviously recorded before they did SmackDown and NXT and everything else at the tapings for SmackDown. So the crowd, you know, early in the night, they're excited, they have energy, they popped for a lot of stuff. It really came across as a fun match. And these two guys, you know, did a lot of neat stuff. They had, Curt Hawkins get out of Trent Beretta's spinning DDT and instead hits a reverse neckbreaker and gets the pin. So, you know, just fun. Fun match. Good match. We're checking out. They do the Raw recap and then come up with the Raw-branded matches, Santino and Kozlov versus Zack Ryder and Primo. So, of course, you know Zack Ryder and Primo going to lose, right? Doing the commentary is Jerry Lawler and Scott Sanford. Scott Sanford is, I don't know if he's a former New York City Nightly News anchor or if he's still doing that as well, but local New York personality started doing stuff for WWE, I guess because where they're at in Connecticut, they get the New York television, and so just decided to give that guy a job here. But regardless, he actually does a pretty good job, voice for doing the commentary. But as far as the match goes, again, match was not, it was not great. It's Kozlov and Santino versus Zack Ryder, the woo-woo guy, and Primo. So, you know, you're not going to get a five-star match or anything. But again, a lot of energy, lots of fun, went through a commercial break, so they had lots of time. And I think for me, that's really it. If you have guys who have energy and you give them lots of time, you give them, you know, there were three matches on Superstars. It's an hour-long show, a couple video packages in there. But for the most part, mostly the show is wrestling. It's just fun to see these good matches. It ended eventually with Santino doing a stunner and then did the Cobra and got the pin. And so Santino Kozlov victorious as a tag team. And, you know, good match. We had Mark Henry in a handicap match versus the Usos. And this was just... I was a little less satisfied with this match than the others. Handicap match, heels, overpowering the babyface. But there's just something, Mark Henry for me, if he's in a squash match where it's him versus one smaller guy and the match lasts 3 minutes, fine. I really have no problem with that. This is one where the time worked against them. They had too much time to do Mark Henry versus the Usos. They didn't want to just job out the Usos in 2 minutes. So they let them actually have some time and, you know, do quite a bit of wrestling. But, again, just not good. It's just, I guess there's only so much you can do with Mark Henry. That's why I like the idea of him being in a tag team with Evan Bourne, because he can do the power stuff. Then get out of the ring and let Evan Bourne do the dynamic stuff that actually, you know, keeps your attention through most of the match, the fun stuff he does. But then you bring in Mark Henry to have him do the big moves that, you know, storyline-wise, wear the guy out and, push the match forward. So this, the time ended up working against them, but eventually Mark Henry grabs one of the Usos. I don't even know who he is. and does the world's strongest splash on him, then hits him with the world's strongest slam and gets the pin. Mark Henry victorious. And big pop from the crowd, because again, early on in the night, so they were just happy to see it. So that's enough for superstars there. But really, if you're one of those people, you know, that you watch Raw and you're like, man, there's like no wrestling on this show, you know, quick matches, 5-minute matches, then everything's over. Well, then check out Superstars, because you actually get some time in the matches, and it is fun to watch. All right, now we go to Friday Night SmackDown. And again, unlike Raw, there was time given to a lot of the matches on here, which made them feel important, made them feel fun, made them feel like real contests, which I enjoyed. The problem was they continued the Kane versus Edge storyline, and as far as I'm concerned, they've mishandled pretty much everything with Kane in the last year. Everything they've done with his storylines, from The Undertaker was in a vegetative state, to him cashing in Money in the Bank, to, you know, everything else, just... I'm at such a point where I don't care anymore. And the storyline makes absolutely no sense. Show open with Kane coming down to the ring, still world champion after Survivor Series, able to defeat Edge. They had Kane grab the microphone and just say that he misses his dad. That Edge has taken Paul Bearer away from him, and it's not fair. And he wants his dad back. He wants Paul Bearer back safe and sound. And I'm sorry, but isn't Edge the babyface and Kane is the heel? So shouldn't the heel be kidnapping someone who is close to the babyface and then torturing the babyface so the babyface can make the comeback? Because really, this whole storyline seems to be Edge as the heel, you know, jerk, kidnapper, breaking the law, stealing a human being, and then using that to torture the other heel. And I know Edge is supposed to be a babyface now over on SmackDown, but he's doing the heel stuff. He does kind of, you know, alleviate that with the promo he cuts later on, but it's just... everything that Edge is doing is the stuff that a heel would do to a babyface. And Edge as a babyface doing that to Kane as a heel just doesn't work. It doesn't have the same resonance that it probably should. So anyway, they had Edge come out on the stage with an empty wheelchair. He said, ask politely and I will give you your dad back. So Kane asked politely. Edge tells him to add please, so he adds please. The crowd chants that Kane needs to do it on his knees. But, you know, Kane didn't do that, but Edge just kind of stared at Kane, said nope, and left. And Kane was just standing in the ring after he'd said, I'm sorry, and got nothing out of it. So, I don't know, Edge is just a big douchebag? Anyway. Our first match, Kofi Kingston versus Jack Swagger, qualifying match for the King of the Ring. Lots of time. There was, maybe you could say that the middle, when they started hitting submissions, slowed things down, was a little too long. Maybe they should have done like a minute less of that slowdown stuff, but they started high energy, they ended high energy, so I think it was fine. Spent a lot of time on that, and eventually they had Kofi Kingston hit the Trouble in Paradise and get the pinfall. Kofi did look very sloppy in this match. He did mess up some stuff. They did some roll-ups, and he had a hard time getting into the right position, and I'm not sure what the deal was that made him off tonight, because I've seen him do pretty much the same spots before, especially on Raw, doing them live instead of a taped show, and never had a problem. Well, I wouldn't say never had a problem, but not as many problems as it seemed to be tonight. But regardless of some of those missteps and whatever, overall, fun match. And had a lot of time. Looked like Swagger was going to get him with the ankle lock, but Kofi just basically reversed the ankle lock into a Trouble in Paradise and got the pin. So it was fun. They had Kane in Teddy Long's office, and he was apologizing for the way he had treated Teddy Long last week. And they had Edge cut in on the television set, and he had Paul Bearer there, and he said, you know, they're over by the cotton candy stand or whatever, and he ripped the tape off Paul Bearer's mouth, and Paul Bearer said that Edge is a bastard, and how dare they treat them this way, and all these people in the arena, even if they had parents, they're still bastards. And so Edge just basically rolled him off screen. Kane ran down to find him and instead just found the empty wheelchair waiting for them. They had Josh Matthews in back with Alberto Del Rio. And Alberto said he was the, Josh said that Alberto was the underdog against the Big Show tonight. And Del Rio said, you know, I may have gotten knocked out of Survivor Series, but that's because everyone else was trying to steal my spotlight. And he said, it doesn't matter. He's not afraid of the Big Show. He is going to, you know, be the king of the ring because he likes the name King Alberto Del Rio. They had Big Show come out in a Knucklehead shirt, which, by the way, I watched Knucklehead. It was okay. The problem was it felt like it needed another rewrite, and I believe it was there was some sort of strike or looming strike that they thought was coming, so they rushed the script into production or something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it really felt like there was something there, but they just didn't quite have it. And I think the main thing is it really needed a better epilogue. The wrap-up of the movie just, it ended too abruptly. They needed like another maybe 5 minutes there at the end to kind of tie up some of the loose ends of the storyline. The other big thing was Big Show, they weren't sure if Big Show was simple because he had never been outside of this orphanage his entire life, or if he was retarded. They kind of went back and forth between the two. So they needed to kind of clarify that a little bit more. And I think that's something that, you know, again, if they had had another rewrite on it, it would have helped out there. So there's some funny stuff in it. It's not a great movie. By no means go out of your way to find it. But if you get one of those coupons for a free rental at a Redbox, you got Netflix or something, you can stream it, you know, download it for free, whatever. Just go ahead and watch it once, you know, to say you watched it because it's not terrible. Not good. It's definitely not good. All right, so they had Big Show in his Knucklehead shirt and threw it out to the crowd. They had Alberto Del Rio out there. They basically had Alberto Del Rio trying to do some sort of attack on Big Show's leg. A couple times he tried doing drop kicks to it, just kicking at it, trying to do all sorts of stuff. Eventually he tried to do a flying armbar, but of course Big Show overpowered him. Threw him into some kind of Samoan drop, tried to go for the knockout punch, and Del Rio just kind of jumped out of the ring. So Big Show chased him outside of the ring, and when Del Rio slipped back in the ring, Ricardo Montalban, I don't remember what this guy's name is, but the ring announcer that Del Rio has, grabbed Big Show's leg and kept him occupied outside of the ring, and Del Rio won by countout. And so then Ricky Ricardo, whatever that dude's name is, got the crap beat out of him by Big Show. And once Big Show was counted out, he realized he had been screwed over, and that was that. They had Edge come out onto a balcony, and he said that he wanted Kane to come out and talk to him. He had Paul Bearer there in the wheelchair. He said he wanted to push Paul Bearer down the steps, asked everybody in the crowd if they wanted to see that. They all said yes. Kane begged Edge not to push his dad down the steps. So Edge said, well, we're just going to turn around, go back here to the snack bar, meet us in there. And he pushed his way through the curtain. And they showed Kane running through the crowd, up the steps, went through the curtain, and again found an empty wheelchair waiting for him on the other side. They had MVP come out. He has a new song. Not as bad as R-Truth's new song, but nowhere near as good as his old song. Starts out kind of the same way with the clock, but then goes into something different. Doesn't have the energy, the pop that the old music had. So who knows if they'll cut bait on that one in a couple weeks. But they just need to do a re-edit of it or something so it's got a loud, you know, kind of explosion sound there at the beginning to get people into it. But it was MVP versus Drew McIntyre. And the crowd, I don't know what happened at this point, but at some point during this match, the crowd just kind of stopped caring. And I don't know if it's because Drew McIntyre was getting over, because Drew McIntyre took control through most of this match. And maybe people are just, you know, so sick and tired of Drew McIntyre. I'm not sure. I thought the match was okay. It was nothing special. They had Drew McIntyre work over MVP's arm. He tried to stomp him on the head on the steps, but MVP moved out of the way, grabbed McIntyre's leg, bumped him on the apron. But, you know, when MVP did his big comeback, he went for Ballin. People weren't really into it, and Drew McIntyre was able to reverse it, got the Future Shock DDT, and ended up getting the pin, and people just really didn't seem to care. They had Jack Swagger in the back yelling at his eagle, told the eagle to straighten up and fly right. They had Hornswoggle getting his Thanksgiving dinner from Rosa, and it was burnt because she can't cook because she's stupid. So Hornswoggle saw the eagle, grabbed his knife, was going to stab it and eat it, but Rosa took the knife away, so he grabbed a bow and arrow, shot it off screen. You heard the eagle, "Wah!" And then they had the little midget grab his knife and his fork and chase after it to eat it. And that is your big blow-off for the Swagger Flying Eagle, or Swagger Soaring Eagle. The eagle is now gone. I believe someone internally actually made a statement last week when everybody was getting cut that the eagle was also in that round of cuts, and this was him being gone. So I'm sure next week on SmackDown, they'll have Hornswoggle with eagle feathers sticking out of his mouth. He'll pretend to still be chewing on the carcass, and you'll have that to laugh at, because that's funny. Lay Cool came out. They demanded that they stop the music. They said it was the worst week they've ever had. They had their title stolen at the pay-per-view. They could not get in on Raw, but yet they are still flawless. Out came Kelly Kelly. They had Layla spray in their face with some sort of, I don't know, Axe body spray or something. Michelle McCool got the went to go for a pinfall, but Kelly Kelly rolled through, reversed it, and got the pinfall instead. So Lay Cool got mad. They attacked Kelly Kelly, started beating her up. Beth Phoenix music hit. And amazingly enough, they didn't hear the music playing because they didn't notice the entryway. They didn't see the Glamazon running towards them. They just kept beating up on Kelly Kelly until Beth Phoenix came in and tossed them both out, beat them up. And she and Kelly Kelly are best of friends. We had the Cena recap video. They went through all of that type of stuff with John Cena and getting fired and Miz cashing in the briefcase. There you go. Next up, we got Rey Mysterio versus Cody Rhodes for the qualifying match. They had Alberto Del Rio come out and do commentary. Fantastic job on commentary. He needs to join the SmackDown commentary. CM Punk on the Raw commentary. That's some good commentary stuff. Although, as much as that's awesome, I don't want to see Alberto Del Rio not be a competitor anymore because I like seeing his matches. Rey Mysterio, Cody Rhodes, again, fun match, a lot of time, did a lot of just fun stuff. Rey, of course, did all his high spots, all of that kind of stuff, but, you know, they allowed Cody Rhodes to get in a lot of good stuff. He got in his crossroads, he got in, you know, whatever. Alberto Del Rio at one point jumped up, tried to help Cody get out of the 619, and Rey jumped off the apron. Went for Cody, but Cody ducked, took out Del Rio instead. Cody ran into the ring and pushed the ref, so got into a little bit of an argument with the ref, and Del Rio took out Rey Mysterio, threw him back in the ring. Cody hit the crossroads a second time and was able to revive the ref and get the three count. So Cody Rhodes moves on to King of the Ring. Rey Mysterio screwed out of it. Rey Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio still have lots of heat. Cut to the back, they had Teddy Long. Cage barged in, was yelling at him. Edge appeared on the TV again, said they're out in the parking lot, come out and check us out. So Kane runs out there, sees Paul Bearer sitting in the wheelchair as he's running towards Paul Bearer. Car comes out of nowhere, plows into the wheelchair. Paul Bearer decapitated, body ripped in half. Kane walks over to the body, picks up, realizes it's full of stuffing. It's a fake body. The car backs up. It's Edge driving. Paul Bearer's in the back seat, and Edge takes off down the road. And funny thing was, Kane, at this point, picks up Paul Bearer's fake decapitated head, chucks it at the car speeding off through the parking lot, and actually hits it, like, 60 yards away. Just, like, all the way on the other side of this parking lot, just pow, hits it with the head. That was pretty awesome. But, you know, at the same time, again, I don't understand. Edge rated R superstar, heel for a long time, suddenly he's a face, but he's still like the world's biggest douchebag. How does this work? I just don't understand that dynamic. But SmackDown, lots of matches with time. King of the Ring qualifying matches that were fun, moves, high energy. Just, you know, really a good show all the way together. It's a shame that SmackDown isn't the Thursday night show anymore. That was always its, you know, time frame. When they moved it to Fridays, I think it was a mistake. If it had been on Thanksgiving night, families sitting around watching this episode of SmackDown, I think would have done really great for it. Instead, people watched a good episode of Superstars, not great. If they watched Impact, I'm sorry, but Impact and Reaction, here's the problem. First of all, Reaction is not the show it was meant to be. It's turned into this other show, which, first of all, is the Impact Overrun, which is a huge problem internationally, because people internationally don't get Reaction. They get Impact, and Impact at some point just kind of stops, and they never get to see the finish of the main event. They never get to see any of that Overrun stuff. And then what's actually on Reaction is no longer this, you know, documentary style of people talking about their matches. It's become just much more of just more random stuff. Ric Flair getting iced. People hanging around backstage just doesn't, I don't know, to me it just feels like it's kind of lost what it had when in that original focus of being like this documentary show that kind of played alongside Impact. But still, Impact was not good. Reaction was not good. That's all I have to say about those. So, anyway, guys, thanks for listening. That's going to wrap it up for you today, your big recap week in review show, about 46 minutes here. So time to wrap things up. But thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget, you can always stop by the forums. If you come to LockerRoomHQ.com, click on the forum button. You can find the sports section. You can find the wrestling section. Feel free to post there. You can also leave us a voicemail. It's area code 217-953-4025. That's our automated voicemail line. You can just leave us a message there. Also, you can send me an email, dirt@popculturenetwork.com, if you have any questions or comments you'd like to send me, and we'll cover those here on the show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hey, hey, mama said the way you move gonna
break his back, make him humble, and then f*** us. I want to have a sex with him in the Victor, and I want to say, yeah, I'd like to come have a good time, use my medicine, maybe we can have a little bit sex. I'll give you my medicine, I'll give you my beer, now I want to get a little bit massage, a little bit sex.